Log Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with a mover and shaker in the music world. My guest today is Nate B.W. Harris. I'm sure we'll get behind the B.W. at some point in the interview. He's based in Denver, and he's the man behind the punk band Minor Authority. Before I introduce Nate, I'd like to give you all a sample from their new CD, which is titled Punk Side Up. And this is the title track, Punk Side Up. That'll get rid of the cobwebs first thing in the morning. Nate, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Simon. I'm glad to be here.
So let's start with a little history. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and how Minor Authority came into being?
I think it all started out when I was younger in my adolescent years. For the first 10 years of my life, I was growing up in this small little redneck town, and I guess you could understand how hard it is being the only punk rocker kid surrounded by a haven of rednecks. It was pretty off. It was a pretty interesting why my parents moved there in the first place. God knows why, but I mean, I'm not complaining anyway because it toughened me up, I guess. And then when I was about I'll say 10 years old, I was going through my dad's home studio. He's a musician. He's been so for about 30 years. That's part of what inspired me to play music. But I was going through his cassette tape collection, and I came across Rancid's Outcome the Wolves. And of course, 10 years old, I didn't really know what that was at first, and I kind of asked my dad, "Yo, what is this?" And he put it in, played it for me. After listening to the whole thing, I'm like, "That's it. This is what I want to do." And then going on later. I think I started, I started learning guitar when I was about 11. And then it was, at first it was really a hobby, but then after taking the whole music into play and seeing that I wanted to play punk rock, started, I started taking lessons, but, you know, that didn't really work out for me. I was more of a self-learner. You know, I was, you know, I'd go to my teacher, he'd give me my charts of stuff to do, you know, I'd just be like, you know, screw you, I'd throw it aside, I'd go home, and I'd go home to my stereo, put on some Ramones, and that's why I started learning playing guitar to Rancid and Ramones records.
That's great. So tell me a little bit about Minor Authority. Who are the rest of band members?
I think Minor Authority started out kind of going through lots of different band members. I originally started the band with one of my really old friends, Steve Kilcrease. Me and him, I originally came to him with the idea of starting a band. I just came up to him and he said, you know, hey, man, I got that. I want to start a band, a punk rock band. He's like, all right, what are we going to call it? And I said, well, I thought we might call it Minor Authority. He's like, oh, that's so sinister. I love it. Let's do it.
Where does the name come from? Is there any deeper meaning?
I thought of Minor Authority because originally I was I was growing up as a particularly very angry kid, and I always had this like sinister envision in my head of like this world with no authority. So it's kind of an envisionment of, you know, a world with very minor authoritative figures.
Right. You're based around the Denver area. Does Denver have much of a punk scene?
It's an all right scene. I mean, it's typically more underground, more sinister, because, you know, a lot of people don't see the real solid underground scene that we have here. It's more, people are paying more attention to, you know, the more mainstream scene of, like, all the pretty boy punk rockers, like, you know, you got your Blink-182, Sum 41, whatever's going along.
Right.
And people are paying attention to that, but they're not seeing what's really going on. And, you know, what I'm trying to do with this band especially is get some particularly larger notice for our scene, but I mean, not to, like, put us in the mainstream. That's the absolute last thing I want to do, because, you know, something gets into the mainstream, that becomes institution, and you ultimately lose your goal. I just want people to know, you know, we're here, you know, we're here, we're going to be here, we don't care what you say.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about mainstream. I had a conversation with a journalist yesterday when I'm not doing reviews. I actually cover some news stories, usually from a rather bitter angle, shall we say. Anyway, I was talking to an Emmy-winning journalist, ex-CNN guy, and he accused me of being mainstream. I mean, I nearly fell off my chair. I am anything but mainstream. So,
I mean, you're on an independent internet radio show. What the hell's so mainstream about that? Tell me, please.
Right, exactly. you kind of alluded to the fact that it was one single cassette tape that sent you on this road toward punk. Who are your big musical influences?
Well, Rancid's the first one, absolutely, but along the years, I kept coming across other bands that kind of, you know, solidified my place in punk rock and kind of kept me there. Like, I listened to the Distillers, Dropkick Murphys, and then I got into a lot of the old stuff, you know, the Ramones, Sex Pistols, Crass, Black Flag is another really big one, and then I was actually influenced by a lot of old rock bands, too. Like, I'd be listening to AC/DC, a little bit of Ozzy Osbourne, actually, when he was in a lot of Black Sabbath.
And then good old Ozzy.
Yeah, good old Ozzy, right? And then actually one band that my dad introduced me to, an old Australian band called Rose Tattoo, we had their old cassette tape, and I would be listening to that And, you know, me and my dad would go on our road trips when I was younger, we'd pop that in, we'd listen to it all the way there and all the way back.
Right. Do you see punk as gaining in popularity? Are we seeing a kind of a punk 2.0?
Could you repeat? I don't know. I don't really understand.
Oh, okay. Punk started off in the late 70s in England.
Actually, one thing, if you look kind of farther back toward the 60s, I think definitely what I think is definitely, a lot of people don't know about the MC5 and Iggy Pop.
Iggy.
Started off.
Yeah, I have a number of early Iggy DVDs, and they are quite entertaining. And you're quite right. I mean, Iggy
yeah,
was.
I mean, if you look earlier back, it actually started with Iggy, and actually a lot of people don't know, Malcolm McLaren, before he started the Sex Pistols, he started managing the New York Dolls, but during like last week of their existence, and after the New York Dolls fell, he decided to take that same idea of punk rock, take it back to England, and started the Sex Pistols.
Right, but punk really hit England big time in 78, 79.
Oh yeah, that was a big breaker year.
Right. And then it kind of died away. So my question is, do you see punk reemerging? Is it gaining in popularity?
Well, I definitely see it coming back as more of a, I don't know how you say it. I want to say cult, but you know, a lot of people associate cult with something being evil. Not at all. I see it coming back as not just like an institution as it's been looked upon with like all the mainstream ads. I see it coming back as, you know, it's coming back as the way it was meant to be, you know, more underground, more sinister, more likable. I mean, it's not just a band trying to sell the record. It's a band that has a chorus that people want to sing along to.
Right.
And that's what punk rock really is.
Right.
It's more of an attitude. It's an attitude that's definitely put to a chorus that just makes you want to sing along.
Right, and that's actually segues really nicely into my next question. I always view punk as very much a live phenomena. The, you know, you have the audience; they're the fuel to the fire, if you will. Did you find it difficult to transition into the studio? You know, to maintain that high level of energy.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, just like anything else, when we go, you know, when we're playing a live show, yeah, we're in the energy there. We're there to play our music, but I mean, we're more than anything there for the punks, and we're there to give the kids a show. But you know, it's not hard to transition at all. It's just, you know, when we go into the studio, I just treat it like a live show. Except I get to, you know, punch in and punch out. But you know, whenever I'm in the booth with our buddy Ian, our EMP Gilchrist, he's the one who's been producing and helping us out with this stuff from the start. If I'm in the booth with him doing guitars, or if I'm in front of the if I'm in the vocal booth, you know, I just close my eyes and I imagine that I'm in front of a crowd.
Right. I read a fascinating press release. This was a few months back, and it concerned a punk band that was in the studio, and they were endeavoring to get that high energy level going, and the studio wasn't very large, and the bass guitarist managed to smash the neck of his bass guitar into the lead guitarist's mouth, dislodging several teeth. Yeah, it sounded kind of dangerous.
I never heard what band that was, but I think I actually heard that story around. Yeah, the bass player came and smacked the guitarist's teeth out.
Right. I mean, it wasn't on purpose. I can't remember the band's name. I know that they're repped by a guy by the name of Mike Kubelus. In fact, he comes out with the strangest press releases. I always read them because they're always good for a giggle. You never know what's going to happen next with his bands.
Oh, yeah.
Is it mainly the Denver area that you play, or do you venture further afield?
Well, right now we've been having to play mostly the Denver area because, you know, we've been just starting out. But actually, one thing I want to throw in, because the band's technically been in existence for a year, but, I've gone through a lot of previous members with the band before, not really had a solid lineup for the past year. And, it was kind of hard for me to keep it together because, for the past of last year, I was kind of going through, on a binge of drugs and booze. But then I was finally able to get sober, and then late January of 2009, I was actually finally able to get a solid lineup together, and we've been successfully doing shows since March, actually.
Right.
The band's been going around for about, I think I could say about a year and a half, because the name has been in existence for close to 5 years, but it's just for the first 4 years I wasn't doing, pardon my French, jack shit.
Right.
But the band has been around for 5 years. The band has been in action for about 2 years, but honestly, the band has been in full existence since about late January.
Right. So it is a very young band.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 19. I'm the oldest one in the band. Everybody else is 18.
Good Lord.
Yeah,
you're making me feel very old.
No, we shock a lot of the other older bands we play with.
Right.
Because, we've played with a lot of older bands. Technically, we've played with the Casualties and Time Again. And, they asked us, you guys are pretty kick-ass. How old are you guys? What are you guys, 20, 25? We're like, oh, no, man, I'm 19. We'll be like, oh, I'm 19, I'm 18. They'll be like, oh, my God. I mean, part of it is they're shocked to see a band that young that what they say sounds like something that, came out of the 80s.
Right. How important is the internet to a band like yours?
It's definitely helped us out. We've been able to network certainly out to other states and other countries.
Right.
And it's because of this that we're able to book shows in other states. We're getting a tour going through all the way through the West Coast and through Vegas and Arizona.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. We're getting our resources together over MySpace and getting all that together. But basically what we do, we go on MySpace, we search for the bands that are in that area and ask them, hey, we're going to be coming through your area. Is there any, we're touring through your area. Is there any, could you hook us up with a show? And usually they'll be like, oh yeah, that's absolutely.
Right.
And then sometimes, we'll go on the internet, we'll go and find the website of the club or venue that's in that area. And we'll get their contact information and contact them and say, yeah, we'd like to book a show. Here's our MySpace, go listen to our stuff.
Right. For our listeners, where can people find you online? What is your website and MySpace page?
We do have a website. It's just a bad name, www.minorauthority, all one word. And, of course, all you MySpacer geeks out there, you can find us on MySpace. It's just myspace.com/punksideup.
Can people listen to sample tracks, the old try before you buy touch?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. On our website, we actually have a tunes page. So what you do, you go to our website, and very the top of the menu bar, you just find the one that says tunes. You click on there, it's all the track listings. Just find the ones that are highlighted. You can click on that, and you can sample an MP3. And then if you like it, you can go to our store. You can go to our merch area. Just click on merch, and that's where we sell our record.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. You get free preview of a record, and then you get our 12-track album, only $10. It's a steal.
Oh, I love what the independent bands are doing. I know that the big labels hate the internet. They view it as an invention of the devil. But
it's stealing all their business.
Right. But I mean, for the small independent band, it's a wonderful way to get your music out there, and you know, people can listen to it. And I am a firm believer that if people like what they hear, they will, you know, put the money down because they want the real article. They, you know, rather than a relatively low quality MP3 or even a high quality MP3 for that matter. You know, it's so much more fun to have the real deal. You've got the sleeve notes. You know, you've got something you're going to hold and look at. Let's take another musical break here. I'd like to play another track from Punk Side Up, and this one's called Survivalism.
Oh, yes, that's a very good one.
Turn to ancient history just for a moment. We were talking about it a little earlier on. The popular view is that punk was born out of fan frustration. Rock bands of the day had really distanced themselves from their fan base. You know, and punk was music for the people, by the people. Is that still very much what punk is?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if the way you definitely look at it, because, I mean, you know, now it's become all these bands, you know, these big bloated concerts, you know, it's like five, it's like 1 hour, like 45-minute guitar solos or like 45-minute drum solos. And, you know, they're just playing a show, no interaction with the audience, you know, they're just like, when the hell do I get paid?
Right. Actually,
With punk, and the difference between that with punk rock, I mean, it's something, you know, that's sung for, it's made by kids, sung for kids, to kids, and, you know, and people, and the kids have something to relate to because, you know, they're singing all these messages, you know, this is us, you know, we need to create our own army. We need to spread our message. And you know, all the punks, they're going like saying, "Hey, that's us. Sign me up."
You mentioned earlier that your father was a musician. I believe your father is Bob Harris, is he not?
Yes, he is Bob Harris.
And if my memory serves me well, he didn't he play with Frank Zappa for a while?
Oh, yeah, he played with Frank for quite a while.
Right. Do you and your dad ever jam together? I mean, I would imagine that would be an entertaining thing.
I don't know. I guess if we ever wanted to jam, we could, but the thing is, me and him were just so damn busy, it's kind of impossible.
Right.
I don't know, he's sitting right next to me, so I might try and ask him after I'm done with this interview.
Well, do that, yeah. and you can tell him he's next on my hit list for interviews.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell him, all right.
Well, what does he think about having a punker for a son?
He's definitely thought it's interesting, but, you know, he supported me all the way through. But his friends joke with him about it because, you know, all his friends are like the melodic rocker dudes. So it's like, how's your son? And he'd be like, oh yeah, he's doing good. He's got his own band together. And they're like, oh, what kind of band? He's like, and my dad just says, punk rock. And they come up, they give him a big hug. And they're like, oh, Bob, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry.
That's great.
But they're joking, of course.
Of course. Punk rock concerts can be pretty raucous affairs. Do you have any great concert stories for us?
Oh, yeah. I have a couple, actually. It was actually the first show we ever did with the old band. First or second drummer's house, and we were playing his house party. But, I mean, the thing is, we were just all completely hammered for that show. I mean, everybody was pretty drunk, but I was pretty gone. You know, I would be playing a song and I'd forget which song I was playing, and then I'd go up to the guitarist and be like, dude, which song were we playing? And then our last song we covered Blitzkrieg Bop, and I was looking out into the audience and just everybody was kind of bobbing their heads or standing still. So, being as drunk and stupid as I was, I put down to my guitar, drove myself into the audience, and started throwing people around to start a circle pit. I don't know, our drummer wasn't too happy about that because we got beer all over his floor. But it was a pretty interesting show. That was actually the first time that I met my very good friend and bassist in the band now, Daniel Hoy. It was the first time I ever ran into him. It was just funny because meeting him and having him in the band was kind of a chance meeting. I don't know. At first when I met him, I thought he was, quote-unquote, the biggest asshole that I ever met. But, I mean, now that I know him personally and now that I've, you know, gotten to hang out with him and know him, I think he's a pretty good kid.
You said you were 19. You're just starting out. Is music going to be your career? I mean, where do you see yourself in 15 or even 20 years' time?
Oh, hell. I see myself, you know, playing music until I'm dead. You know, this is... Yeah, it's basically all I know. I mean, I was lucky to finish high school, but I mean, I don't have a higher education than anything else. I mean, writing the songs I want to write and playing the songs I want to play, it's basically the only thing I know, but it's something that I love and that I want to keep doing for the rest of my life. You know, I see myself as an old dude on stage in a wheelchair with a big old gray mohawk having a heart attack on stage. Good night! Clunk.
Kind of like the Rolling Stones.
Kind of like that.
The only band I know that requires wheelchair access to the stage. Nate, it has been wonderful talking to you.
I'm honored to be on.
Alas, my producer is whining in my ear, so I do have to bring the show to a close. But I will say this, that we will have a text wrap-up about the interview on www.bloggernews.net, and we will be linking to the recording. So, everyone that couldn't listen live, they will have an opportunity to listen to this fun program at their leisure. Nate, it has been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and I'm sorry I had to get you up early.
No, it's fine. You know, anything to get my lazy ass up in the morning, you know?
Right. Okay, this is Simon Barrett from Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a great day. Thank you so much for listening in. And we'll be back again shortly. Nate, once again, thank you so much.
Cheers, mate.
Okay, we'll talk again, I'm sure. Goodbye.
Cheers. Later.